This is the Friday, September 16th, 2016 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. In light of this news and the numbers generated by USDA, we have assembled a blue ribbon panel to break down those numbers. Joining us are four of our regular market analysts. Mark Gold is a managing partner with Top Third Ag Marketing. Naomi Bloom is a senior market advisor with Stuart Peterson. Angie Setzer is vice president of grain for Citizens Elevator. And Don Rose is the founder of U.S. Commodities. Welcome, everyone.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
Let's set the table with the market closes. December wheat was flat, and the nearby corn contract moved 4 cents lower. The November soybean contract fell 14 cents. October meal dropped $4 per ton. In the softs, December cotton lost $1.80 per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, October Class 3 milk futures declined 60 cents. Prices in the livestock sector were mixed for the second week in a row as the October cattle contract added $3.48. October feeders put on $1.67, and the October lean hog contract chopped $3.75. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index gained 75 points. Crude oil flagged $2.85 per barrel. Gold fell $24.30 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index shed almost 14 points to finish the week at 347.25. So let's get to it. We start this week off here looking at the wheat market. Don Rose, did we put a low in on the Chicago wheat contract here?
Well, I think when you look at the wheat contract, really, the nearby wheat, it's low enough. But at the same time, we are really trying to stay competitive in the world. We're having a hard time doing that. When we move higher, we run into a huge competition from the Black Sea. So, you know, I think when you have LDPs down in the wheat area, 30, 40 cents, we're at very low Richter level on the downside. But on the upside, we're going to have to figure out how to increase consumption or else reduce acres. If we move higher, our consumption erodes a bit. So I think that's really where we're at as far as the market's concerned. For any sizable move to the upside, we're going to have some weather problems, Mike.
Okay, and as we look out onto the international scene, we did see some decent exports this week on the wheat side, but we continue to be stymied by Egypt and their ergot fungus ban. Angie Setzer, as you look out for world demand, how is U.S. wheat sitting today?
Well, you were right. We saw some really good export numbers. I think we saw the best export numbers this week that we'd seen in 2 years or something of that nature for hard red wheat. So we're seeing it. The big question is, how will we see Egypt proceed? Yet again, they put out a tender. Yet again, they got no offers on that because of the ergot issues. They did reject another cargo of Russian wheat this week because of the ergot. So the big question is are they running out of wheat? Is there an issue domestically there that'll develop to where they're going to have to change either their limits on what they take or find a new supplier and pay more? Is what they'll have to do. You know, you can't expect to get the cheapest price and have the highest quality necessarily. So that's going to come down to it, is what are we going to see develop there and where it heads. It's quite interesting to watch, but I'm glad I'm not the Egypt buyer or the Russian seller at this point in time.
All right, Mark Gold, as we've watched this wheat market over the past, well, really several weeks, there has been a very definite tie, it would seem, to the outside, to the U.S. dollar. We saw the dollar get a little bit stronger as we closed out the week. Do you expect that tie to be in place?
Well, certainly, if we can get the dollar to move lower, we're going to see some stimulation in the export market without question. The wheat, I think we've got a bigger issue there. We need to stimulate demand somehow. Can we do it with the lower dollar? Hopefully. But I don't want to be too bearish down here. We've come a long way down in this wheat market. I don't know what Kansas farmers are going to do about planting issues. I don't know what bankers are going to do about lending money this year. And, you know, when we get to these cheap prices, we see some acres come out of production. Demand's going to come back into the market. So our recommendations, if they've sold wheat, certainly look to re-own it with some call options and see what happens, because all it takes is one weather incident to really change the whole dynamics of the wheat market.
Now, Naomi Bloom, you're nodding your head in, if we've made some sales down here at these lows, get in and re-own it. How far out are you looking to re-own?
To July of 17.
Okay.
Yep, some bull call spreads might be a nice simple way with no margin call risk to go about doing that or buying the call outright. Everyone touched on important points about the world supply right now. There is some chatter, though, that there's going to be too much rain in Australia, so perhaps there's some quality issues coming up there. And with as short as those funds are, that is the friendliest fundamental in that market. And I don't know that there's going to be one particular thing that moves the wheat. It could be all of a sudden three or four little things that have a ripple effect, and all of a sudden, boom, that market's going to be up 50 cents or 75 cents before you even understand why it's higher. So I agree, Mark, we get those calls in place.
Now, at one point, there was almost a record short position held by specs in wheat. Is that still in place,
yes,
or are we still?
Yes, ridiculously short.
Okay.
It's, yeah, needing some sort of news to just trigger them to buy those positions back.
Okay, and we're probably too early in the year. If we start to hear of farmers cutting back on acres, that's not going to be enough to pop it, or would it be?
Well, it could be significant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this credit issue in the next 6 months is going to be critical for a lot of farmers. Mm-hmm. We see certain groups backing away from loans. Farmers are looking more at the private sector to try to pick up some of the slack there. And it can be an issue. We don't have to shift a lot to really make some dents out here. And like Nomiya said, one or two little things, and all of a sudden you're 75 cents higher. You go, what happened? We still have big carryouts, but that's how the market works.
I just got done talking to a seed supplier this week in Michigan, and I said, so what do you think? Guy's going to cut 10 to 20%? And he said, that's the minimal side.
Wow. Really?
Of it. He said right now they're sitting on piles of wheat seed that typically by this time of year guys have started to say they're whether or not they're going to lock it in or not. And so he says he's really expecting a significant cut in soft red.
Okay, and soft red, that yep. was my question to you.
And soft white. I mean, our soft white, Michigan's one of the rare states that grows both. And this past year, in the 2015 crop year, we saw a $3 premium for soft white wheat that was ended up getting kicked in the shin by some. It ended up being high enough that we could import Pacific Northwest white wheat. And so it ended up wiping out that premium. And, of course, everyone went out and decided to plant soft white wheat last fall. And so this year they're pretty much on par, white and red. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of how that switch happens.
Okay.
But, you know, the U.S., Mike, does have an advantage on the quality issue. We had some real quality issues with the EU and some other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if there's an advantage for the producer out here, it's probably in the quality wheat. Great deal of feed wheat out here, and that's the big issue.
And if I'm a feed yard looking at a potential record large corn crop, or at least very large corn crop, and the idea of a very large wheat crop already sitting with cheap basis, how much of that wheat do I want to go ahead and make purchase of today?
Well, you know, the feedlots were waiting to see what the size of the crop was going to be before they started changing rations. You don't start one and then change. You don't do that in the cattle business. And I think, you know, you're at a level now where there's enough wheat around that I think that's really the job of the market is to offtake some of this wheat into feed. But that's also the corn problem because it takes away from demand on the corn a bit. So I think that's the circle we're talking about.
Well, let's jump into this corn market. We had the USDA come out. They did lower their national average corn yield. They dropped it from 175 and change to 174.4. What does that tell you as you look at this market? Is that an indication that the USDA will continue dropping yield? Naomi, you're nodding.
Absolutely. I firmly believe that they will. With as hot as it was at night this summer, I think there's more reductions to come. In 2010, from the August to the September report, they dropped yield that year two points or two full bushels. And then from the September to the October was a bigger drop because the combines were going. I think we're going to see that in the October report, a bigger drop, and probably get closer by the time it's all said and done where yield is going to be sitting more like 169 or 170.
Okay.
We'll be there.
Angie?
Oh, I agree. That's Naomi and I have had conversations about this pretty much since July, I think, behind the scenes, and I agree wholeheartedly. I think the USDA was probably right on at the 168 they started with.
Okay. Now, Mark, as you're looking out at this market and we're seeing those yields trend down, combines are getting out into the fields. Some guys have already made some sales. They maybe panicked, sold a little bit, concerned about storage. How do you handle those sold bushels down here at this market?
Well, you've got two things to consider in the next 6 weeks. You've got the brunt of the harvest coming, which should put some pressure on it. And whether we're at 170 on a yield or 174 on a yield, we're going to be close to a 15 billion bushel crop. We've never had a store of 15 billion bushel crop. Where are we going to put it all? So that tells me that we could certainly have some harvest pressure. On the other side of that, though, is the government wanting to see this market move higher to reduce these insurance payments. So could we have an October 1st rally like we saw last year? We certainly could. So the position, in my opinion, is that if we do see any kind of a rally in October, you've got to be really getting aggressive on that. When we get the harvest pressure and these markets will tend to try to move these stocks out, you look to buy a call maybe mid-December, somewhere in that time frame, to replace it. Because, you know, farmers get so caught up. And when we're at high prices, we're never going lower. And we're at low prices, we're never going higher. And, you know, this is the time I want to be bullish. I want to be bullish corn at $6, $7, and $8. I want to be bullish corn at $3.50. And maybe we're going to go a little lower first. But in the long run, you have to look at a marketing picture in a long run. I believe there's some upside potential, particularly after the first of the year.
Okay. Don Rose, I'm going to ask the question, same one I asked you on the sweet market. Is that 318 or 317 and change that we bounced off of, is that the low? Have we put in a harvest low already?
Well, you know what? We probably have, but the harvest low was 301 and three quarters on September corn. You have a real problem in the corn market, and that's that you have these big carries in the market. You had 301 and three quarters as a low, but here tonight you're sitting about 362 on July corn. So it's the carries that's the real big issue. So, you know, probably in usually going into harvest, if the crop gets smaller, you usually go up as you harvest. And I think that's what the market's really having trouble with, is the crop's smaller than what we thought, but it's also still big. And like Mark said, it's still a monster crop. And you have to remember, wheat, we ran into the same situation. We had a huge crop. We had trouble tucking it away, and wheat hasn't been able to get off the mat yet. And that's what you have to be afraid of. Corn, when we get into the winter, it could be a second harvest.
Okay, so that's the supply side. Friday was Iowa's official E15 day, celebrating that 15% ethanol blend in gasoline. When we look out at the demand picture, Angie Setzer, when you're talking to your farmers and looking at end users, where is the demand sitting today?
Well, I think the hardest part with our demand right now is you have to keep in mind the feed wheat availability that we were discussing early on. That's going to kind of keep a lid on our feed usage that we see. Our ethanol usage, depending on crop quality, is kind of maxed out as well, unless we see some significant increase in ethanol exports at that point in time. At $5.2 billion, you know, unless the crop is far less quality-wise versus a year ago, you're going to see that it's really exports are where our big demand growth will have to come from.
Okay. Naomi?
Yeah, exports are definitely something to be keeping in mind, and of course the correlation with the dollar, which is going to have a lot of volatility in the coming months, is something to be mindful of. But I agree. I think the corn is finding its bottom here at these levels. $3 is too cheap. Probably see the market stay in a range later this year yet, where $3.50 to $4 is a nice sideways trading range until we find out more about what's happening in South America with how things are growing there. So that'll be what we have to keep an eye on next.
Okay. Have you heard any concerns about quality out in the corn crop from those guys that have started the combines and run some bushels through?
Mark? I get about 20 to 40 actual yield estimates. Not estimates, they're actual off-the-combine numbers. And they've been fairly variable. Some guys, I would say in the early stages up until this week, the numbers were well under what you would think you would see with a 174 crop out there. The last several days, we're getting 240s, 250s, 260s out here in a lot of places, and a lot of places you might not expect to see it. So, you know, I'm not so sure we're going to see a 170. I think we're going to come down a little bit, but I don't really see, you know, unless the government wants to really try to get rid of those insurance payments, maybe they'll come up with something friendly out here.
Okay.
Kernel depth has been what I've been hearing a lot of discussion come from, and your test weight comes from your kernel depth, of course. So we've got to watch. And yeah, I've had a lot of both, where it's very variable in Iowa is what I've been hearing so far mainly. But the one thing that I'll be interested to see once we progress is where our test weight's at, because that's where you're going to get your EYP, your ethanol yield potential there, and that'll be where our ethanol numbers will come from. If we have a lower yielding crop, because last year we had such a phenomenal high quality crop, that the ethanol ratio that we were getting out of each bushel ground was much higher than what we typically would see. Therefore, we did have a little bit of limit on how many bushels we were using. So I'll be interested to see, you know, as we move forward, especially with some of the talk of the frost potential towards the last half of this month. The last time we had a late frost, you didn't think it did any damage to the crop, but we ended up with 50-pound test weight corn and That's a nightmare.
Yeah. And that makes those numbers coming off the combine look a little bit different when you actually scale it over.
Yep.
Now let's move into this soybean market. USDA, again this week on their supply and demand estimate, came out with a 50.6 national average soybean yield. Was that surprising to the market, do you think, Don? Were you anticipating that high of a bean yield?
Well, I think the potential is there. We saw private estimates go through, and they had some big yields. And, you know, August was nearly ideal for soybeans. So I think that it wasn't a complete shocker. I mean, otherwise we would have really torpedoed the market down. But, you know, it was, again, like the government has on all these markets, it's huge demand versus, you know, huge supplies. And they just have us caught in a range here, really. You know, we're going to watch South America weather. But probably you talk about yields, we'll probably go realistically up another half to a bushel. History says that going in. So, you know, you're going to have a carryout that could grow to 400 million. We have just a huge demand already underneath the market. I mean, that's the issue. If that one changes at all, supplies even get bigger.
Okay, now that's the question. We've got a question here from one of our Facebook followers. We encourage all of you to find us on Twitter and on Facebook. You can just search for Market to Market. This one came from Jess in Webster City, Iowa. And Naomi, Jess wants to know, what should be done with beans that are not marketed yet? When we're watching that demand picture, how do you handle that uncertainty in your crop marketing plan?
Well, I would say get your target set for hire and then get those orders with your elevator ready to go. The market tested that 940 level this week, and that was big support. It could have jumped off the cliff and just totally fallen apart if it wanted to. But the fact that we finished today as strong as we did because of the forecast for wetter weather here, there's demand for the beans and they need to get to market. So I would say get some target sales out there closer to 975 November futures, 995 at the most, not the magic $10 number. Don't do the round numbers. But get your orders out there. And then there's going to be a lot of beans that come to town this harvest because that's where I think you can get the money at and corn's going to get stored. So get those target sales there. And then if by chance you're not able to make a cash sale, then I would consider some puts at that level. But in the bigger picture, I think beans are going to be more in a range bound, sort of a 940 to 975, 980 sideways range pattern for a few weeks here yet.
Okay. Now we are gearing up for, I believe, record export, or at least record shipments as we get into October, November, and December. Angie, as you're talking to folks, how excited should we be about that? Is there any potential that we're just front-loading this next marketing year?
Well, I think that there should be attention paid to that, especially if you're planning on storing the beans and you're sitting in a traditional export market location. You know, your crushers will need beans year-round. Your exporters are going to need them up front. Therefore, they're going to pay the basis values that they need to get the beans in. But at the same time, I think beans will flow in to elevators and things of that nature at harvest because of the cash flow reasons, because guys are going to hold corn because the market's telling them to. You know, I'll be interested to see. I honestly think our front loading is going to end up having more to do with our spreads. Therefore, if you're hedged in the November and you plan on holding on to beans further out, I'd probably take advantage of rolling now that the carry has reestablished itself in the market. I've been rolling my elevator position at 4, 5, and 6 cents carry. 6 cents happened months ago, but 4 and 5 did happen this week. So I think that's the one thing to look at as a farmer is if you're planning on holding beans, be aware of the fact that the heavy front-loaded demand side of things means that the market itself could invert on you and take away some of that incentive to hold those because the market's job is to bring them to market when they're needed. And so that front half of export demand will definitely make for some interesting basis levels at some of these end users. Toledo this week pushed really hard to load salties, you know, the last half September, first part of October. And with the wet weather that we're seeing, I think we'll start to see perhaps some quality issues in parts of Iowa for sure. And then some basis incentive because there's people that were anticipating beans coming to market already,
right,
and they're not.
So be nimble.
Yes.
The moral of the story.
But if you know that you would have sold at $9, sell at $9 cash. I mean, that's...
Okay. Now, Naomi, since you are our native Wisconsinian, I want to talk to you, get your thoughts real quick on the dairy market. A little bit of a pullback this week. Are we finding a new bottom, or do we have a little bit farther to go?
Potentially, it could have a little further to go. It continues to be the same story, where supply is so, so humongous, and there is not a supply issue at all. The demand has picked up in the export front, and then we are finally competitive in price compared to Oceania. So that has been what has been supporting our exports. But again, with the dollar moving around and all of those types of things, looking at milk prices probably in the bigger picture here to stay between 16 and 17. But if any signs of that demand in the export market, if any of that demand goes away, prices really could fall pretty quick. So you have to watch that real close.
Okay. Now we're going to take a move into the livestock markets. Now, Don Rose, I know you have been out traveling. You have seen cattle country recently down there in Kansas. As we look at this live cattle market, we've seen a little rally over these past 2 weeks. Well, over this last week especially, can we start to breathe easier on the fed cattle side?
Well, you know, we've got a lot of good things ahead of us. One, we've been, with the basis that we had, we did pull a lot of cattle ahead. So our weights are down. We're down 2% over a year ago. So that's the good news. And I think we probably have socked in an intermediate low when we got down under $100 on nearby cattle. You know, the other thing as we're moving forward, it's a little bit early. But, you know, in this time frame, you start to look at weather issues. If it's wet, you know, you get cattle with longer hair. They get some issues and they slow down on their performance. So I think, you know, that's another thing. Start to look at the weather. But overall, I think from a risk management standpoint, rallies, we're still in a supply bear market. You know, get up over 110, you probably have to start hedging cattle again.
All right. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Well, on the cattle market, we've seen so many of these bottoms, these near-term bottoms, and we keep rallying $8 or $10 off of each one of these bottoms, but from lower and lower levels. Which one's going to be the real one that might turn this market around? It's hard to say. We need to see some fundamental change in the market. But I agree right at this standpoint. I believe we can move the cattle higher. The trend lines are really a little bit higher than we're at now, another $5 or $8, even off of where we closed on Friday. So when we get back up to that level, certainly you got to look at putting a strong put position underneath you to protect yourself on the downside.
So as we look another $5 or $6 higher, you're thinking 111, 112 might be an opportunity on the board, or are you buying puts today here at the 107, 108?
You know, we'd be buying puts today because this market has a tendency to start looking good, and then all of a sudden something happens and it gets whacked again. So I haven't seen any confirmation that this is the bottom that's going to be the one out of the last 10 that actually holds out here. So we want to keep the puts in place. And if we get an opportunity, cattle move $10 or $15 higher, we'll move those puts up to a higher level.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we've got to have some protection.
All right. Want to go to one of our questions here from a Twitter follower. This is from Trinity Ranch in Arkansas. Trinity Ranch wants to know, where are feeder prices headed over the next 3 to 9 months? Naomi Bloom?
Well, that's a tough question. Just thinking of how demand is for them, there's a lot of questions between the livestock producers from the standpoint of should they or shouldn't they. I would say more along the way of hanging out right where they are. I can't see them falling apart. I don't see them going too much higher, but I don't see any big excitement. What are you thinking? You've got a smile on your face over
there. Yeah, Don, you're grinning.
Well, I think it depends on where you think the cattle market's going for the pull. And I think, like Mark said, I think one of the reasons we don't hold is because we're in a multi-year bear market. We still think going into the fourth quarter of 17, you're going to $85 to $90. So I think that's a real issue for the, you know, cattle guys just don't want to pay too much for feeder cattle. And they don't come down like they should. But they want to keep the feedlot full. So I think that's the issue. You know, I think feeders probably come down a bit too.
All right. And Angie Setzer, before we go, we've got a little bit to discuss here in the hog market. We've pulled back a little bit.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here? You live in north central Iowa. You're hog country. What are you seeing?
Hog country. I think we see more of the same. You know, I'm really interested from a protein market standpoint, and I've discussed it a couple different times this week. Naomi and I actually talked about it. We don't hear a lot about it, but with Brazil's feed issues, you know, they've been one of our biggest competitors from an export side of things. And the last time that we had a tremendous feed issue like we did in 2012, we saw significant cuts to herd size. And so that hasn't even started to be discussed at this point in time, but it's not as though they're going to find a way to remedy their feed situation between now, February, March, April timeframe. And with their credit issues as such and the things that they're dealing with, I think that could be kind of the sleeper in the market that could give us maybe a nice kick in the right direction. But at this point in time, it's not as though we're depleting our supplies of hogs out there. It's pretty much more of the same. Is we have steady supply, and until something new comes up from a demand standpoint, it's probably going to be difficult to really get a big jump in price unless we see, again, something that cuts into that supply, you know, similar to what we saw with PEDV a few years ago. And no one wants to see that
to encourage higher prices. So we will get into this a little bit farther as we get into our Market Plus segment. But I want to thank everybody so much for taking the time to participate.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the broadcast portion of Market to Market. But as I mentioned, we will keep the conversation going, including answering more of your questions during an extended Market Plus available on our website. And join us again next week when we explore how heritage breed farmers are working to produce pork with a purpose. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.